Welcome to the latest edition of Baseball As It Was. I'm Brian Wright. Glad you're tuning in to this podcast that focuses on the history of baseball, events both positive and negative. And no moment would capture both sides at their respective extremes than the 1965 fight between San Francisco Giants Hall of Fame pitcher Juan Marichal and Los Angeles Dodgers catcher John Roseborough. It was arguably the ugliest incident in baseball history, but there is far more to this story of initial conflict and eventual compassion, as pointed out by John Rosengren in his book, The Fight of Their Lives, released in February 2014. Roseborough and Marichal's fight, on the surface, can easily be interpreted as just a brushback war gone wrong. But as Rosengren notes, Roseborough, who's African American, and Marichal, a native of the Dominican Republic, were greatly affected and angered personally by recent events.
Things don't happen in a vacuum, and both these guys were troubled by current events, and as well as the intense rivalry between the Dodgers and Giants. The two teams are locked in a pennant race late in the season of 65, and it's the fourth game of a critical four-game series being played in San Francisco. And the, as you mentioned, there have been a series of brushback pitches, and those finally erupt in this brawl. But the backstory for the two individuals is that Marichal, Dominican, as you pointed out, was troubled by the Civil War being fought in his country and literally worried sick, thinking about his family's safety back home. He had a sinus infection that flared up during the season because he's watching the images on the television news, or TV news, of the battle taking place in the streets of Santiago, and he's wondering, you know, how's his family doing? The only way he can reach them is via mail, so it's a week to send a letter and, you know, a week to get a response, and the family doesn't have a phone on the farm. So he was in such a bad state, his teammate Willie Mays said Juan should not have been playing baseball that summer. Meanwhile, John Roseborough is a black man living in South Central L.A. Just the week before, he's watched the Watts riot go down. From Dodger Stadium, he and his teammates could see the smoke billowing up from the burning buildings, and he was wondering, you know, why are we playing baseball when things have gotten to such a terrible state with race relations in our country? It was very personal for him, too, because one night the demonstrators were scheduled to march down the street in front of his house, so he stayed up that night to protect his family, sitting on the front stoop with a loaded gun. So Roseborough was on edge, you know, so you get the tight pennant race, the, you know, late in the summer, that in the context of the Dodgers-Giants rivalry, these two guys on edge, it didn't take much to ignite a brawl.
Exactly, excellent. And you know, even in the earlier games in the series, I had read that there were other, you know, brushbacks and pitches that were inside. So all of those elements that you mentioned all put together kind of escalated to this point. And on that day, as far as the two, as far as Marichal and Roseborough, Marichal knocked down Maury Wills, who was the Dodger captain, with a pitch high and inside. Marichal's mound opponent was Sandy Koufax, who, from what I knew, or what I thought I knew, didn't like to pitch inside, but his knocking down of Willie Mays later wasn't an uncommon practice. As you pointed out, he would knock down opposing hitters if necessary.
Yeah, Marichal had knocked down Maury Wills and Ron Fairley, and Koufax had thrown a pitch actually well over Mays' head, and later he said it was a bad pitch, it should have been closer. And the myth about Koufax is that he wasn't willing to throw inside. Now, it is true, he didn't want to hit people in the head because he was afraid he could kill them or hurt them very badly. But he was willing to throw inside and even hit a batter now and then, and he did that just early in the season when Lou Brock showed him up. He, you know, plunked him in the ribs the next time he came up. And so Koufax went to Roseborough and said, "Who do you want me to get?" But the plate ump had warned both benches if there were any more tight inside pitches, he was going to eject the pitcher. And obviously the Dodgers don't want to lose their ace in a critical game in the third inning when Marichal came to bat. So Roseborough said, "Let me take care of it." And he did.
Yeah. As you pointed out, so after Mays was sent to the dirt by a Koufax pitch, Marichal retaliated with one inside to Ron Fairley. And as you just said, Roseborough said he would take care of it. After a pitch, as you wrote, quote, "Johnny intentionally dropped the ball, moved behind Marichal to pick it up, and whizzed his throw past Juan's face. Marichal later said that the ball clipped his ear," end quote. So after the two jawed each other, Marichal lifted his bat straight up, and again, as you put it, quote, "brought it down toward Roseborough's head like he was splitting firewood," end quote. And, you know, the end result was a gash over Roseburg's left eye and the famous images of Koufax trying to play a peacemaker while, you know, Marischal's wielding the bat, as well as Willie Mays also trying to restore order, escorting a bloodied Roseburg away from the fracas. What was the initial impression of the incident from fans and media? Was all the blame laid on Marischal just for the absolute, you know, absurdity of what he was doing?
The immediate reaction was shock. You know, people who were there at the stadium told me that they couldn't believe it. You know, they kind of looked at one another and said, did we just see what we thought we saw? Did the batter just hit the catcher with the bat? Because nobody had ever seen it, had ever seen anything like this before. It was way out of line and out of character for Marischal. And once they got beyond that, then they started thinking, now, wait a minute, nobody should be hitting anybody in the head with a bat. This is terrible. And that the majority of people outside the stadium just saw the image, the photograph that we use on the cover of the book, with a famous photograph many of your listeners have probably seen, where Marischal's got his bat raised and Roseboro's toppling over after Marischal struck him. And that photo seems to indict Marischal and portray him as the villain and Roseboro as the victim. And so, you know, when people saw that photograph, they're pretty quick to judge, and they, say Marischal is to blame, and they castigate him, and he was widely reviled throughout the baseball world and the general public. What many people fail to take into account, and the picture, of course, doesn't show, is how Roseboro provoked the incident, and he later admitted as much, but by throwing that ball back past Marischal. And if you pause and think about that for a minute, here's the batter. Pitcher just come in, you know, it's a ball, he's not going to swing, so now he's got his bat on his shoulder, he's looking out toward the mound, and suddenly this ball from 3 feet behind him gets whizzed right past his face. I mean, so close that Marischal said it nicked his ear. I mean, that could have killed him. So he's startled, he's angry, he's turns and confronts Roseboro, and then sees Roseboro coming out of his pouch, and that's when he took a step back and hit him over the head to protect himself. And again, not to defend Marischal for what he did, but I think it helps us understand what happened. And so both men had a part in this, and neither one was blameless.
Well, we have a bulletin from San Francisco on the message board now, and I quote, Juan Marischal hit John Roseboro on the head with a bat following knockdown pitches to Wills and Merrily. Roseboro left the field bleeding over the left eye.
Just as an aside, I know he handed out warnings after Marischal threw inside to Fairley, but do you think the home plate umpire, Shag Crawford, could have done more beforehand to prevent the incident in any way?
Well, I don't think anybody saw it coming, the way that Roseboro handled it. And so I don't think Crawford could have done much more other than what he did. You know, one of the standard procedure, warn the pitchers, don't throw up inside anymore. He wasn't anticipating that the catcher, I don't think anybody was anticipating that the catcher would then buzz the pitcher or the batter.
National League President Warren Giles responded by suspending Marischal. He would miss 12 games. The Dodgers went on to win the NL pennant. Giants were close behind. Dodgers would go on to win the World Series. As for their respective careers, Roseboro would go on, he'd win a Gold Glove in 66, he would make his sixth All-Star game in 69, would retire in 1970. Marischal, more celebrated career, he'd average 20 wins a season from 62 through 71, probably got overlooked and was underrated for being in a pitching-heavy era that included Koufax and Bob Gibson. Late in his career, in 1975, Marischal joined the Dodgers. Fans were still upset about what took place 10 years prior. Roseboro had forgiven Marischal by then, publicly pleaded the fans to accept him on the club. If you could fill in any necessary gaps here, was there a time in between the brawl and 75 in which they had made up? Was there, you know, the so-called olive branch that began the healing process and eventual friendship?
Look, you know, I heard that what you just said, that Roseboro had lobbied fans to give Marischal a chance when he joined the Dodgers, but I couldn't find any evidence of that during my research, so I'm not sure that actually happened. The only documentation I could find was after Marshall finished his brief stint with the Dodgers, which included just two starts, which were dismal, and after that he went to Walter O'Malley, said, "I can't take care of your money anymore, and I'm going to retire." Then Roseboro was quoted in the papers as saying, "Gee, I wish it would have lasted longer. It would have been a good opportunity for him to make good with L.A. fans." But it wasn't the two then ran into each other at an old-timers Dodgers game that August of 75, and photographers wanted them to pose together, and they were a little leery, but, you know, somewhat friendly with one another. But it wasn't until Marshall became eligible for the Hall of Fame and didn't get in because of the way this issue had tainted his relationship or his reputation with the writers that he and Roseboro eventually connected and reconciled.
Yeah, Roseboro, what I've heard, he made a plea to Hall of Fame voters not to hold the incident against Marischal when it came to election. I believe Marischal has passed over twice, and I'd have to assume you feel the same way as I do. It's no doubt a great gesture on the part of Roseboro, but Marischal would have eventually gotten into the Hall of Fame, you know, despite this incident. The fight was something that was holding him back temporarily, but it wasn't going to hold him out indefinitely.
I agree. I think Marshall would have eventually gotten to the Hall. The first year he didn't get in, though he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. He had the numbers to justify that. Bob Gibson was the only guy who got in that year, and he was a first ballot guy, but he got over 100 votes more than Marshall. There's no way he was that much better a pitcher. The second year, Marshall didn't get in either, though his total went up to almost the threshold, and so he was more than likely going to get in on the next vote, but he ended up reaching out to Johnny Roseboro and saying, he called him up and said, "Look, I need your help," you know, and he apologized, and Roseboro agreed to help Marshall. He went down to the Dominican to play in a celebrity golf tournament that Marshall organized. Two of them posed for pictures, and they told the press, "Hey, listen, you shouldn't hold this against us anymore. It's in the past. You've made too much of it." And Roseboro said, you know, Marshall deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And then he was elected in the Hall of Fame. But something else happened during that week that Roseboro was staying with Marshall's family in the Dominican. It was more than just a PR stunt. These two guys spent a lot of time together and realized that they weren't that different, that they actually enjoyed one another's company, and they were able to forgive one another for the past. And that's what makes the story, I think, so extraordinary and you know, one of that is worth telling. It's a good baseball story, but it becomes a human story, the way these two guys reconciled and redeemed themselves.
Along those same lines, up until Roseboro's death in 2002, what was their friendship like? You know, for both to merely forgive and reconcile is simply remarkable, considering the ugliness that took place, and it takes great contrition on both sides. But in what other ways did their relationship grow, aside from the story you just described?
Roseboro ended up managing a season in the Dominican during the winter leagues, and Marshall would go over and visit him at the stadium. They'd hang out and chat in the manager's office. Then they actually would get together at card shows. They would even sign photographs of their famous incident together. They stayed in touch via phone when Roseboro got sick, and he got very sick for several years at the end of his life. Marshall was one of the few guys who would keep calling, checking in on him, seeing how he was doing. And then, of course, when he did pass away in 2002, Roseboro's widow called Marshall and asked him to be an honorary pallbearer and to deliver a eulogy. At the funeral, it was the first time that Marshall spoke in public about the incident.
And you interviewed Marischal for this book. Was he reluctant to do an interview? Do you know what his thoughts are now on the book?
As you might imagine, Marischal isn't proud of the fight he had with Roseboro. He doesn't like to talk about it. He doesn't like it when people bring it up, which they frequently do with him. He'd much rather be remembered for his great pitching, you know, what a competitor he was, his storied career. But we talked several times at length by phone. He was very gracious with me, and he filled in some of the gaps of his life that I didn't know. So we talked a lot about other things. But then when we did talk about the incident, he really dwelt on the fact that he'd carried this weight and this guilt for years, and it weighed very heavily on him because he's a devout Catholic. And so as soon as he was so out of character for him to strike Roseboro as he did, he immediately felt guilty. He carried that guilt, and he said, when Johnny forgave me, I felt such a load lifted from my body. I was so happy that day. And I think he appreciated the fact that the story was told in the way it was, because both men come off looking very good, because I think it was extraordinary that they were able to forgive one another, and you know, I applaud that and celebrate that in the book. So I saw him at the Hall of Fame induction this past summer, and he actually hadn't read the book yet, but he was pleased that it was out there.
We both mentioned that Roseboro passed away in 2002. Who did you speak with in order to get a better understanding of his background? What research did you do on him specifically?
Well, as you can imagine, that was a tough interview to get since he's been deceased for 10 years. I wasn't able to talk to Roseboro, unfortunately, but I spoke to his first wife, and I actually spoke to his widow before she passed away several years ago. And then I spoke to his children and nephew and then others, who knew him. And he also had written an autobiography, and I drew upon that. And it was in his autobiography that he admits he provoked the incident. So I'm not trying to assess blame there. I'm just repeating what he had already admitted.
Going back one last time to the relationship between Roseboro and Marischal, you see a lot of, I guess it's just a thought that comes into my mind, you see a lot of pairings, two people forever linked as a result of like a famous baseball event. When you talk about Ralph Branken, Bobby Thompson, it's probably the most famous of them all. Mookie Wilson and Bill Buckner, they sign autographs together. Joe Carter and Mitch Williams get along well. But the pairing and eventual bond between Roseboro and Marischal is the most unique. The other three come from, this linking comes from ordinary baseball events or plays, a game-ending home run, ground ball between the legs, that occur, with tremendous notoriety. What happened with Roseboro and Marischal is, to be blunt, an assault on the baseball diamond with someone provoking from, provoking from the other party. But nonetheless, a player using his bat as a weapon to inflict damage and bloody another player during a game. And the end result is one that I don't think could have been resolved in any better fashion than it was, with both of them ultimately showing great compassion for one another and displaying tremendous class and contrition.
Well, you said it best right there. I can't improve upon that.
It's just something that I think about, because you see all these... You see it like the two people forever linked, Ralph Branken and Bobby Thompson, and those two are forever linked. I mean, Juan Marischal, you can talk about him, and you can talk about his great pitching career. But John Roseboro, you mention him to a baseball fan, he goes, okay, you think about Juan Marischal. They're two are forever linked, and it's fortunate that they were able to, before Roseboro passed away, they were able to not only make up, but seem to show great contrition with one another.
Right, and I think many baseball fans readily will link those two, because of the photograph that's been around and the story of the fight that has been passed on. I'm just glad that I'm able to tell the rest of the story for those who don't know it, so they know that these two guys weren't just two brawlers, who met famously in a fight, but they ended up being class individuals who were able to forgive one another and reconcile. And like I said, it's a great testament to the character of both of these men, and I'm glad to be able to finish the story for people who didn't know it.
For additional information on this book by John, to include a photo gallery, videos, and endnotes, visit fightoftheirlives.net. For more on John's other books on baseball, go to johnrosengren.net. Thanks so much to John Rosengren for joining us on this edition of Baseball As It Was. Thanks to all of you for listening, and we'll talk with you next time.